Thank you so much for coming. It's great to see so many of you here. For those of you who don't know who I am, I should first introduce myself. My name's Alistair Beak. I'm the CEO of Shore. This is my fourth visit to the Falkland Islands, and I've been coming much more regularly over the last few years. So it's my third year in a row coming down. It's fantastic to be here again. Love being here. And particularly in this room where we've had lots of debates and discussions about telecommunications, especially over the last couple of years as well. So would like to make this as much of a discussion as possible, as interactive a session as possible as well, and welcome really your thoughts and your views on what are the things that you would like to see happen here in terms of the delivery and the provision of telecommunications as we go and look to the future over the next 10 years in particular. I've got a few slides that I would like to run through, but this isn't me or Shore making a proposal to you. This is just some ideas and some food for thought, maybe to stimulate the discussion. I definitely welcome any and many questions, interruptions as I go through the slides, and if not, let's have a productive discussion afterwards as well. There's three key messages that I would like to go through today. The first is that I think a whole new approach is needed in the Falklands, and that's starting with Shore. If Shore is lucky enough to be the longer-term local operator here on an ongoing basis. I also think the way that licensing is done needs to change, and the whole regime and the whole setup needs to move forward. Why do I say that? It's because things have completely changed. From the last time the Falklands was looking at licensing, there was no Starlink. Probably SpaceX existed at that stage, but there definitely wasn't a Starlink service. There was, of course, some kind of direct satellite services, but they were basically for making phone calls and not a lot else. Were very expensive, very limited with what you could do with them. And the world obviously has completely changed in that respect. The costs of delivering those types of services in terms of the satellite capacity itself, I mean, it was tiny, the amount of capacity that was coming into the Falklands at the time. It was very limiting, don't get me wrong, but it was also tiny. But the costs of it were enormous. All of the economics has completely been changed by the investment that Starlink's been putting in, but not only Starlink, and I'll talk a bit more about that later on. So if you look at what's happened over the last few years, I think there has been a gap emerging as we have all led more and more increasingly digital lifestyles. The what's possible with the technology has moved on at such a rate that, sure, in what we were delivering here in the Falkland Islands, there was a gap between what was available and what we could provide. And expectations, the gap of expectations opened up. And I think that's a big lesson to learn, and especially in this fast-moving world, that the change of the structure of how licensing is done, how telecommunications is provided here, needs to recognise that pace is only going to continue to increase, and the demands that we all put in, that you all put onto the broadband network, onto telecommunications, is going to go up and up and up, and mean that it's even more critical infrastructure that's being put in place in the future. So a new approach is needed to encapsulate all of that. And it starts with Shore's approach as well. I think a strong local operator is absolutely central to delivering that. And I'm not saying that is going to be Shore, because we don't take that for granted. But I think the feedback that you give us as a community, or you give to me, is always consistently that the local team, the support they provide, the professionalism they provide, and the local services that are provided are very important to you as a community. That there is that connection between having a team of people here providing local support to local services. I also think there's a role for the local provider to pull the right package and deliver those services as a solution to the community, to businesses, to residential consumer customers, to government, and other organisations such as the Ministry of Defence as well. The third thing is, as I said, we don't take anything for granted. We know that there is going to be a process where the government effectively issues a tender to select operators potentially in the future to provide services. We want to participate in that process. We would like to think that we will do well in that process, but we don't take that for granted. And we know that we're being watched very, very closely at this moment in time. You know, with 2 years and probably slightly more than 2 years as things stand, but not much more than 2 years of a license to continue to fulfill and deliver on. And we will continue to invest. We are continuing to invest, and we will continue to invest to make sure that we deliver on our license obligations, but also do the right thing over that period of time. And that doesn't mean to say that we're going to start building new networks, because we can't do that over that time frame. But we will continue to invest and improve things and make improvements. And I'll show you that the work that we've been doing over the last year to 18 months is paying dividends. We are seeing much higher customer satisfaction as a result of that. And we'll continue to do that, because we would really love to play a role here, but we don't take it for granted. Before I move on, is there any questions with what I've just talked about? No? Okay. So what have we done in the last 18 months? We've made really significant progress. The biggest thing is that we've launched unlimited, affordable, unlimited broadband plans at the speeds of 5 and 15 megs. What we've seen is, yes, a lot of people now use Starlink, but there are also a lot of people still using Shore and relying on Shore, and some people using both Starlink and Shore. And I don't think that would happen unless we had launched the unlimited plans, unless we had improved the speeds, unless we've made some of these investments and these other improvements as well that I'll talk you through. So in order to launch the unlimited plans, there was a lot behind the scenes that we needed to be able to do to be able to get that in a place so we could confidently launch those services. One of the things we had to do was procure longer term, a lot more capacity, so that people would be able to basically use the internet a lot more than they had been. So that's one thing we did. The other thing we did is we wanted to improve the speeds of the local network, and one of the ways to do that is to put more fibre into it, and because fibre basically doesn't get congested. So we put more than 7 kilometres of fibre in Stanley to improve broadband speeds in Stanley. And that is effectively also the beauty of doing that is it shortens the amount of traffic, the length of the line of traffic that goes over the copper network. So you have more fiber from the satellite where the traffic comes in or goes out through to your home. More of that is coming over fiber rather than copper. So that all put together with the extra capacity that we built was basically the way that we were enabling the unlimited plans themselves and being able to speed things up as well. We've done a lot of work on improving the mobile network performance, and I know there are still some issues there and complaints about the mobile network, but generally speaking, you know, my own personal usage over the last few days, and I think the general feedback that you'll see in a moment from our customers is that they have noticed the noticeable improvements in the broadband proposition as well. And we've done some things like put free Wi-Fi into NPA, into the Jetty Visitor Centre, and also into places like the Malvina as well. So now people were starting to be able to enjoy some of those more, you know, visitors, business customers who are visiting the islands, being able to, and also when people just first land, you know, the ability to be able to get online quickly, check your emails, that kind of stuff. Some more normal things have come to the Falklands as well over the last year. What's that done? So we run an annual survey. Some of you hopefully would have answered that survey over the last year. And you'll see here that we've gone from 178 people responding to that survey in 2024 to 418 people responding to that survey this year. And on the right-hand side, what you'll see is the overall, this is an overall measure of customer satisfaction. So it's called a CSAT score, CSAT standing for customer satisfaction. And you can see there on both the broadband and mobile networks that it shot up this year. These are not people responding to how do you find Starlink. This is people responding to how do you find your Shore broadband service, and how satisfied are you with the Shore mobile network. So what you're seeing is close to doubling on broadband and not that far off on the mobile network for customer satisfaction. Now, it's still not where we would like it to be. There's still room for improvement here. In Guernsey, Jersey, Isle of Man, where we operate, those numbers with fibre and broadband would be closer to 8 out of, this is a score out of 10. So there is room for improvement, but it's a noticeable and big step change in customer satisfaction here in the Falklands, and hopefully something that you recognise as well. One of the things we did in the survey was ask people about what's important to them, and one of the biggest things that came out of it was the critical role of a local operator. So 78% of people said that a local operator is either important or very important to them in terms of the support that's provided by that operator. The second thing we asked people was, okay, so how important is a local operator? What services do you see as important as being provided? And what was interesting here is that you can see you've got, it's quite hard to read, so apologies, but you've got pretty much all the services that we currently supply are listed there. And I was surprised by that, because I'd expected basically broadband would be the big thing, and then people would sort of say, oh yeah, and a bit of mobile, and maybe a bit of fixed line, and this kind of stuff, but they didn't. They said, actually, broadband's really important, mobile's really important, data speeds are important, SMS is actually important, as important as data speeds. Emergency calling is not far off as important as data speeds. And, you know, that tells me that people here actually have a broad appreciation for the broad set of services that are currently delivered by Shore as the local operator. And they rely on those services. And I think that's the key message here, is that a broad set of services, which today are provided on a universal basis, are needed to be, continue to be provided. You know, if you look at those that set of services, Starlink can provide one of those services. It will be able to, probably, sorry, a couple of them, the data speeds and broadband, but it will probably be able to provide mobile calling in the future as well. But it's not there yet. Question mark whether it will be able to provide things like emergency calling. Probably won't be providing home phone services and local services like that as well. So there's things, again, are changing, so there's a consideration there to bear that in mind too, in terms of the fact that the likes of Starlink and Amazon are going to be providing more of these services in the future as well. Now, whether in the future you'll actually be able to dial 999 on a Starlink connection and get through to the emergency services here is a big question, and if you dial, you know, a Falkland number, will it automatically go through to a Falklands number? I doubt that it will work like that. And if it does work like that, it would need to, again, you'll need to be integrated between Starlink and the local operator for it to be able to work. another reason why a local operator is important. Some things to consider about the, you know, what a local operator does. The universality of services is a key thing to consider. You know, is it important to you as a community that the local operator can must provide services to everyone? If it is, what range of services do you want the local operator to provide? Is it mobile only? Is it broadband? Is it fixed voice? Is it emergency services? All of these things need to be considered. Can you rely on it? Can it be relied upon, those services, in a critical way? You know, when things go wrong. You know, we live in a far less secure world than we did even 5 years ago. If you look at the example in Iran at the moment, Iran has bombed critical digital infrastructure in the Middle East. They've taken out Amazon data centers in Bahrain, which means that the government of Bahrain is actually unable to offer some of its services as we speak, because those services have been completely dismantled as a result of it. And Iran has specifically targeted those services. So there's a lot to consider there about, A, the security and the resilience of services, and making sure that, you know, particularly from a governmental point of view, that were things to go wrong like that, that there's a plan and there's infrastructure in place. Local support, as I said, I think is really keen. You know, that's the key thing that people say about us today is, I love the team, I think the team do a fantastic job, and it's always such a pleasure to hear that feedback. It's obviously really valued, and I think a local operator can play a role, as I'll show later, with the likes of Starlink as well. Regulation is key. You know, I think that has to change as well. You know, when I talk about things need to move on and change, regulation is part of this formula that needs to be evolved. And we would encourage that, you know, to make sure that you all are happy with the future provision of telecommunication services here as well, and that a different regulatory setup is needed to future-proof it, basically. And the final thing I think it's important to say is that I think you would like your local operator to be invested in the community, in terms of being part of the community. That's how we see ourselves today, that we're part and parcel. Our purpose as a company is to connect our island communities for a better future. And we say that because we are part of the community. We only operate in small island jurisdictions. We're invested here. We pay taxes here. Our friends, our families are here. So we're not somehow different and outsiders to the community. And therefore, we appreciate what's important to the community. And
just ask something. From the critical role of the local operator, what's your view on what the right rate of return on capital employed should be every year?
Wow, I that's quite a question.
Well, it was something that was pointed out in the Cartesian report many years ago.
Was it?
Yes, about the rate of return that you had.
Right, and what did it say?
It was too high, and then you had to bring down and enlarge the internet packages. So I just wondered what you thought was a sensible rate of return on capital employed for a business in something like this.
I think, you know, as we discussed a little bit earlier on, Roger, it very much depends on what the situation is. So let me just explain that a little bit. If Shaw is making a standalone investment in the future of telecommunications here, then we will have, I'll pick a number at the moment, 15% return. If there's some balance to that, or some investment is provided, for example, by the government to reduce that investment and to potentially even to reduce the risk that, that we would have, then that percentage can come down. So it depends on the regulatory setup. It depends on many of these things. You know, what will be the requirement to provide universal services? At what price? What range of services? So
50% is your view as to what would encourage you to invest?
Something in that kind of level, yes. But it's not, as I say, it's not a. I mean, if you're going to throw that back to me and say, is that your minimum starting point? No, you put me on the spot. I don't know the answer to the question. I'm just giving you a rough idea of what I think is in the ballpark. Those are the factors that I think are important to consider as to, you know, what you all want a local operator to do.
Where does mobile data fit into those services?
Where does mobile data fit in?
Was it just not chosen by anybody, or does it not?
I think data speed probably is a bit of both broadband and mobile coverage. You've got mobile calling, mobile coverage, data speed. I don't know whether people. It's interesting actually. It was something we were actually just discussing earlier on. Is, you know, people complain. There's quite a few complaints about the the mobile network. But then when I say and use the network for data, which is how I personally use mostly the network back in Guernsey, you know, I do most of my calling over WhatsApp to my family and friends. And business-wise, I usually use Teams to make calls and things. So I hardly ever make traditional voice calls these days, and I definitely don't ever send texts. Now, I think the only time I get a text is from Shaw saying you've now landed in a country and, you know, welcome to that country when you're roaming. That's about it. Even two-factor authentication these days is run over, in my experience, mainly email. So I'm quite surprised about to your point about the feedback that the mobile network's not very good, because I think it's my experience that the 4G network is amazing. But maybe it's because a lot more people here are still making traditional calls, and that's the problem. And so maybe that's why you're not seeing mobile data coming through here, because people don't just sort of forget it's there, it's a service. I don't know.
I did the survey, and I can't remember from when I did it, but it's not there on that list. So I just wonder if it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't know whether we didn't prompt it or whether.
To be honest, I can't exactly remember. I've only seen the data speed for the coverage, but yeah.
Maybe that's why. Yeah, it could be a miss from customers, I guess. I don't know. So I'm just gonna move on quickly to. So this is maybe a way for how things could work going forward, and this is very high level, and it's an idea. It's not a proposal. And it's food for thought, as I suggested earlier on. So the way I see it is, and the way we see it is, that you have all of this technology up here. So these companies are all up there. these services are flying around in space. They're satellite-based services. And you've got Starlink, who, you know, it's impressive what they've done, and they're still continuing to invest, and they're still moving very quickly. So Starlink, their ambition is to become a global telecoms provider. What they're doing at the moment is they've basically built a broadband network, and now they're starting to build a mobile network as well, so that you will be able to make calls and send and receive texts over that network as well. They're doing a lot of that already at the moment in partnership with local operators. So O2 in the UK has recently announced basically where there's no O2 coverage on mobile network, you can use WhatsApp and you can use a few other things. I think you can send and receive emails, a few other things, and you can do that in a very rural areas in the UK. So it's a complementary service. It doesn't replace O2 in the UK, but it's a complementary service to O2. So, and what it means is you can send a picture at the top of a mountain in Scotland or something like that, where there's potentially no mobile coverage today. But that is going to expand, and in a few years' time, probably what's going to happen is that your mobile phone will be able to use the same similar spectrum to what it can use today over the airwaves and talk to Starlink satellites, again enabled by a local operator. So those O2 customers today don't go, right, I now need to select the Starlink network. It just happens. It happens in the background. So the work is done there, and the money flow is between O2 and Starlink. And you as a customer with O2 at the moment can choose to a premium package. So you pay £10 extra a month, something like that. And then you can get the service. So that's where the role of the local operator comes in with this stuff potentially. And if you think about it, what's happening is Starlink are doing this service, Amazon are doing this service. And then there's companies like AST. So AST is quite interesting. They're funded and being set up by the likes of Vodafone and AT&T. And what they're going to do is build that mobile network in space and then work with, again, local operators to provide coverage where there's no mobile coverage today. Bear in mind this is outdoor coverage because it's not going to be, the signal's not going to be strong enough to get inside your home. And again, all three companies are already out there talking and doing deals with local operators so that when this technology becomes available, it will work on your local operator devices and SIM cards. One quick thing to say is AST is really interesting. So AST, we've actually been helping them to test their service. And one of the things that they're doing is they're sending up a much smaller number of satellites, but their antennas will unfurl to be the size of a football pitch. So they're having these massive, massive antennas up there to be able to provide the mobile coverage down here. We are not just a local operator. So Shore is part of a much bigger group called Beyond, and you might notice the new branding that we've used here. And Beyond has scale. So we operate in Bahrain, the Maldives, and Jordan in particular. And that means that because I think that if it was just the Falklands trying to extend our mobile coverage, as an example, these companies, they're starting to put a price on this and a kind of a minimum level of entry. We have met with all three on this subject and other subjects as well, and we've done that as sure as part of the Beyond group. So we're talking to them about all of the operations that we've got. And seeing it's early days, very early days, but seeing what we could do in terms of adding these complementary technologies to our portfolio here as well. Amazon know about the Falklands and are interested. They're doing something a little bit different. You know, they're kind of following behind on Starlink and are trying to catch up. And they're hoping that services in this part of the world could be going live second half of this year. They did say that last year, so we'll see. But I hope that when they are ready, because they're working from the poles in, so I hope that when they are ready, there'll be an opportunity to partner with them and start to test their services possibly later this year here as well. We'll see. But I think there's, maybe I'll talk about this. So you, you'd have a local operator sat in between all of these services up here, and then what do we need to do locally? So the big thing before was that there wasn't all of this. There was some geostationary providers, but with limited and costly bandwidth. Now we've got a proliferation of services, and costs have come down, and the capacity's gone way up. But we're towards the end of our license, and all of the local, both the fixed network and the mobile network, needs an upgrade to be able to take advantage of all of this stuff here. We can't do that overnight. It's expensive in terms of the level of investment that's probably needed. And again, this goes back to what do you want as a community. But if, you know, we think what is probably wanted by most of you is a fibre or fibre-like type of network here, particularly in Stanley, and I'll get to Camp in a moment. You know, we've rolled out fibre with the government in Guernsey, where the government funded a third of the fibre, and we funded two-thirds of the fibre, and we've rolled it out to every home. That's taken 4 years to roll out, and the whole programme will complete this year, which will be the fifth year of the programme. What we've rolled out there is a 10 gig capable network, so we can deliver 10 gigs to the property. And our maximum speeds at the moment are 2 gigs. I'm not sure that's possible here yet with still the economics of the capacity here, but certainly that fibre network or a fibre-like network could provide speeds of 50 to 100 megs, no problems at all. And we believe that the way the economics is going, we'd be able to buy the capacity from up here to be able to deliver it. Today, we can't deliver that here because the network isn't up to it. Because we didn't ever think that this would come along. The mobile network is... Yeah, I think it's as I say, the 4G network's good. Still, we get complaints about coverage and SMS delivery, and I think it needs an upgrade. It's time for an upgrade. It's at that time of the cycle, and it needs investment. We're currently rolling out a brand new network across Guernsey, Jersey, and the Isle of Man. We're investing £48 million to do that. So my point is. As a local operator, we have experience of doing this, and we know we're doing this at the moment, and we would like to explore whether we could bring that technology, which includes 5G, here to the island as well. Emergency and critical national infrastructure is something that a local operator should do. We do today. So we provide things like cybersecurity defence that none of you would be aware of, but that's something we do as an operator. We route traffic in a very particular way so that it doesn't go through Argentina. These are things that are important, I think, to the Falklands. Maybe not to you as an individual user, but these are things important to make sure that it's a stable service that's provided. We need to include fixed voice, and we're currently testing that as well, so that you could potentially plug that into a satellite provided service direct to your so that there's a mixture of technologies that we can deploy. And then the final one is the satellite broadband. So I think with CAMP, it doesn't make sense anymore to build a great big network that goes out through CAMP. What we should do is use the satellite technology to complement the terrestrial network on the islands. So that's using, like I said, some of the mobile capability, hopefully in the future. But it's also being right at the beginning, you know, just saying actually for broadband, let's use Starlink or Amazon, or you know, the local operator provides that service to you. So you've got someone who can go to for local support, and you know, honestly, it'd be much easier for us to leverage the technology that's there rather than try and recreate the technology locally at a huge investment. with, back to your point, almost no return, you know, for anyone.
You said the importance of the routing, and yet you also said that you might use the technology of something like Starlink. So how would you avoid the routing issue if you were going to be using Starlink?
So I think there's a couple of things to consider there. One thing that, you know, when we've spoken Starlink can route the traffic elsewhere. So we know that when we've looked at Starlink, they will land traffic from the Falklands. A lot of it goes into Argentina, but some of it also goes to Chile. Some of it actually goes to Hawaii. Some of it goes to Japan. And some of it goes to the US. So we know that it's possible, very possible, to route Starlink traffic. Starlink can route its traffic elsewhere. That's one thing to say. Now, the question is, would they? Roger, I don't know yet whether they would. Amazon would be able to do it, maybe not initially, but they would be able to on a more medium-term basis. So the technology exists. I mean.
So what route does your OneWeb go?
It goes into. You're asking me. It goes into Chile, and then it basically comes back all the way. It breaks out. It breaks out in Chile, so it doesn't touch Argentina. And we said that right from the word go. None of our traffic at Shore goes through Argentina, because we'd always understood that was a massive no-go for the Falklands. So we just never routed it like that.
Your internet traffic, doesn't that normally just pick the quickest route and sends packets all over the place?
Yeah, but that's different to landing the traffic at a point, at a geographical point, because I think my understanding is that if you do that, then you can intercept the traffic.
Yeah, but it has to all be sort of pushed in one direction, whereas I thought generally how it works was a sort of mesh network with bits going everywhere, but I could be
completely wrong. The satellite companies are landing their traffic in a specific single location, just like here. You have Earth stations. We're running one of those in Centralina for OneWeb.
No, they're not.
The traffic's not getting split out like that. The traffic's going into a set location, and the satellite up there is sending that to that one location. It will for defence reasons, or if you said right, all traffic, Starlink could say all Falklands traffic could be landed in the UK, and that's one of the propositions now that the satellite companies are building, actually, because they've got laser direct to satellite technology, so they can go satellite, land it in the UK far quicker than a traditional route, which is down to the earth and then under on a subsea fibre cable or land fibre cable to Europe or to North America. Sorry for the getting a bit technical there, but and Roger, if the Falklands says, look, we're not worried about traffic going to Argentina, that's your call, that's not my call. If that's what the government says and the community says, then it doesn't matter where the traffic goes. We were just saying that we have understood in the past that you didn't want traffic to go to Argentina. And even things like, I've heard some complaints about, you know, when you first fire up Starlink and you watch Netflix, you're watching Netflix in Spanish, aren't you? Am I right? I don't know. So it's those types of things that is a repercussion of where you land traffic and how you manage it. If you want it in English, then you need to land the traffic in an English-speaking country.
Was it?
But it's now fixed, is it?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So everything appears.
Yes.
Sorry,
I thought through Chile.
Right. Interesting.
And if you were to route it through Argentina, would that come at a reduced cost to people, or
it doesn't for the way we've done things in the past. And I doubt it would make any difference to Starlink and those guys and Amazon. It's not really a cost issue. They'd probably try and charge us a bit extra for it, but I don't think it's that material. No, it's not double the price or something like that. Yeah, and then, you know, what I wanted to say was that, so what the local operator can do is take all this amazing technology and then deploy it in the right way for residential customers, for business customers, and for government. And we could actually, if it's us, we could do something, or the local operators could do something different to what comes out of the box with Starlink. So, for example, we could use Starlink's technology, because they offer it as a gateway as well, for communities like the Falkland Islands, and take that massive pipe of capacity from Starlink and offer it through our fibre network to consumers and to businesses in different packages and different prices than Starlink offer themselves.
Just on that, that was what you were supposed to be doing with OneWeb originally, which the government helped to finance, but you haven't managed to do that, have you? I mean, you've done it to a couple of places, but you haven't managed to get it to all users or other users.
Have we? I think we have done what we said we would do, Roger, in terms of being able to offer OneWeb to the community, yes. Has, you know, originally what we tried to do was have a service that was over and above what we had originally proposed, whereby you could use LEO for some so GEO for some things, and then OneWeb and LEO for other things,
yeah,
over the same connection. And the technology isn't ready for that. Whether that's, honestly, whether that, it doesn't matter whether that's OneWeb or Starlink or Amazon.
That's what hasn't been delivered.
Yeah. I don't think it's not what hasn't been delivered, because we didn't. As far as I can remember and recollect, we didn't say at the start of the process that's what we were promising to do. What we promised to do was to bring OneWeb and low latency services to the community, which is what we've done. But I do take the criticism that we were late in doing that, partly because OneWeb was late in launching its network, and because we try to bite off more than we can chew in terms of providing the two services in that combined manner, which the technology just is not ready for. It's not ready to do work in that way.
How does the customer access the low latency services now?
So if you want to have the OneWeb service, you can come and talk to us. It's mainly businesses that are asking for that low latency service. So we actually set it up as a dedicated connection for you. We're also in places like the Malvina using a separate OneWeb device or just the OneWeb service.
The OneWeb service.
So that's a good example of where if you use the Wi-Fi in the Malvina now, that is running over low latency and the OneWeb service that is, I believe, being delivered in the way, Roger, that we said we would do it. Again, albeit that it was later and a lot later than we had originally suggested it would be. But that's not what I'm not talking about here, a merged type of service. What I'm saying is that we would potentially build a service that takes the capacity from Amazon, from Starlink. And I wouldn't rule out geostationary at all as well at this stage. And the role of the local operator is to take the service and, for example, offer 1 gig services to business customers over a fibre network. That would be possible if the local operator did some arrangements with some of these providers and use their technology. And yet a business customer couldn't go to Starlink, can't go to Starlink today and say, I'd like a 1 gig service, please. So it would enable us to package things up differently and meet the needs of Falkland Islanders on a unique basis, rather than, if you like, going direct to Starlink, who just have global propositions. So that's a bit of a vision, and I've spoken now for way, way longer than I should have done, but thank you for the questions and some thoughts. Yeah, please, can I hand it over to you, and look forward to some, hopefully some discussion and debate.
Question. Just a basic question. All the hardware in the Falklands that you use and maintain, the new fiber cables underground, or the satellite dishes up the hill, Shore's offices, all the stuff in CAP, does that belong solely to Shore, or is that government property?
I think most, you know, the vast majority is Shore's. It was Cable and Wireless. Shore's, it was Cable and Wireless's before, yeah, I guess that was it, isn't it? It's always been, it was either Cable and Wireless or Shore's assets that have been deployed here, yeah.
How congested is it up there with Starlink and Amazon and ATS? Are we running out of space?
That's definitely not from what I understand. So I went to a presentation in March, and what they were saying there is that Starlink's capability is going to go up 40 times more than today. So they, for the environmentalists around here, you might want to close your ears. In 2030, they think that between 30 and 40 satellites will be burning up in the atmosphere of Starlink alone. I don't think it's so much the number of satellites as the scale of what those, you know, the power, the strength of the signal and the broadband capacity in those satellites is going to just go up and up and up and up and up.
Because when they become obsolete, then they just stay up there floating around, or what?
No, they burn.
They burn up.
Yeah, they bring them in and get rid of them. This new Falcon, I think it's the Falcon rocket, the payload of that is just basically, it's a game changer. And so, you know, Starlink's being sort of funded to take astronauts up to Mars and all that kind of stuff by NASA, but at the same time it's used all of that investment to build a rocket that then can basically launch all these satellites. And Amazon is doing the same thing, and AST and others are taking advantage of this new space race that exists. So the economics of launching satellites is just, it's incredible.
There must be a point where that get saturated and one or two of them will become the leaders over the others.
I mean, well, Starlink already is, and I think that it'll be interesting to see, you know, you look at OneWeb and Starlink and they're very, very, very different. It'll be interesting to see the extent to which Starlink, you know, does dominate. And I think you have to be a bit careful of that as well, in thinking about this, you know, like I was talking about, do you want to rely on them, or do you want to keep in terms of the way the regulatory regime works or the framework works, keep options open? And I think that's probably why a local operator is quite important, because you can kind of your local operator can play that role, not be aligned to any particular supplier.
Like, as an organisation, how do you like stay? It's such a fast-moving industry. How do you stay ahead of the game? And I would say that's probably where Shore went wrong before, is not keeping up pace with change. So if you were to have a 10-year plan, how would you avoid keeping that?
Yeah, very, very good. Very interesting question. I think the main thing is that, as I say, that kind of 10-year horizon is probably it's too long. The second thing is, so we committed ourselves for too long to certain things as well. So, for example, we committed ourselves to to the satellite backhaul to this bit, you know. Sorry. Yeah. Just. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. We did that in partnership with the government, but in hindsight, that locked us in. And although we, you know, I feel like we did an amazing job, given that we were locked into a very long-term contract, 5-year contract, we have done an amazing job in negotiating the extra bandwidth that we brought to the island, which enabled the unlimited. But that was a tough discussion to be having when you're in a contract for until the end of 2027. So, and that's exactly what I mean. Things have to change. We have to change. This, I think. The other thing to think about is strategic investment, and what I mean by that is thinking about that. But some of these things you have to do; they are long-term cycles. You know, you can't think of, do you roll out a fibre network over a 3-year period or not? That doesn't make any sense. No one's ever going to make a return over, you know, silly thing to do over 3 years. You may as well just stay with using Starlink terminals and seeing what's happening. You know, that kind of stuff. But I would say that is a generational type of investment. I think this mobile one is, it just keeps evolving. You know, so 5G will last for a decade or more, and then there's 6G, and that, you know, that will just keep changing and evolving. But that is something, if you look at copper, it's basically like a 100-year-old technology, and I know it's maybe more, you know, being a bit kind to do it, it's more like the last 20 or 30 years that you've been able to carry data over that network. But the fibre network could, you know, or a fibre equivalent network could last for decades. So that's maybe how to think about that. You know, there's some short-term stuff and there's some long-term stuff. But up here, you don't want to be aligning to anyone in particular, and I don't think you want to be committing for more than a couple of years or 3 years at the moment, and then you go again.
Effectively paid for your mistake in making something, whereas if it had been a competitive system, you probably would have changed earlier to supplying a better service. The structure of the deal, you know, from a point of view, you know, meant that you may as well sit there and not do anything, because there wasn't the competitive pressure that you'd have in a more open telecoms market.
I honestly don't think it's to do with competition, no. I think...
In a competitive market, you, as a company, in order to keep your consumers, you would have had to have changed and moved with the times. Whereas in a monopoly, you could continue to provide a substandard service because you could say to people, you can't go anywhere else.
Countries where you work, do you have exclusive licenses? Because I can tell you now, nobody in the islands are going to have any appetite for the government offering any exclusive licenses of anything.
So
how do you work in the rest of the world?
Yeah, we do. We have competitive licenses in Guernsey, Jersey, Isle of Man, but where you have small island communities like Falklands, Centralina, Diocia, and as an ascension, we didn't. And competition there meant we left the island, or we pulled out telecommunications because it didn't stack up.
Yeah.
So I don't think, Roger, you know, to answer your question, it is to do with competition. I really don't. If we have a competitive setup here in the islands, it would be because it was a bigger island.
But there was more customers. Yeah, but there would have been an incentive to change.
Yes and no. I think we, as I said, there were some things we did which I regret. You know, but we did it with you as a government as well, like make an agreement to a 5-year deal with to provide the backhaul network. And that has always been the limiting economic factor here, that we couldn't just go and spend, even already the government was contributing £1 million a year to that. And so there was a limit to what we could do. And you can't, like that, overnight, react to Starlink. As a telecoms operator, there's no way we could do that. It was a very difficult position for us to work out. How do we best respond to this? And I think maybe people don't understand that either, that we did sit down and make quite a lot of proposals even before the petition about how we could improve things. But what we said was we can't do that as a standalone business. That the economics weren't there for us to do that. I believe what we've ended up doing is not that far away from some of the proposals that we made 18 months, 2 years ago. We were open to it, and it wasn't because we had seen an ascension. I want everyone to understand that we did see, you know, that we had to improve things because Starlink was coming along and expectations were changing as well as our lives becoming more and more digital. So we did see that quite a long time before, because ascension, we lived and breathed that. We saw people switching from shore to go to Starlink. And so we were very concerned that the same thing would happen here, Centrelina, and other places as well. And that's why we were open to a discussion very, very early on about trying to see how we could make this work. I think what we've got to, as I said, is very, very close to certainly what we proposed a year before the agreement came together. And my regret is that we didn't do that then and make it happen sooner. But I hope that what we've got to now is a place where you've got access to Starlink services and you've got access to shore services. And what I'm really pleased with is that still a lot of people are relying on shore. And I hope that continues for a long time. And I hope what you've heard today shows that we're very, very interested in improving things, taking this new technology that's there and using it to benefit everyone in the Falkland Islands in a model where a local operator is really central.
If you could go back to your first slide and your three first introduction points, I was very heartened to see that. In that, the new approach is absolute. That's got to happen.
Great.
I'm not convinced with the things you're saying that you're broadening that to carry on to be here. But let's hope that will work out. Lots of discussions needs to be done with all these groups.
Yep.
Strong operator, that is it. We were forced. We're dinosaurs. We use very little internet.
Speak for yourself.
We were forced when you changed to go from the small package to the big package, and you're correct on all your other slides. We're happy with that for the amount we use. It's great. But the strong local operator is your employees that you know here that have just been absolutely marvelous. And I'm thinking in my mind, in an ideal world, let them take over. Let other little companies come in and do all these bits, and we just have a cooperation, a conglomerate, what do you call it? Anyway, consolidated of stuff. Sure doesn't need to do everything. We've got talent here. We've got lots of people that can do stuff. So you've got to go back to that number one, and yes, we want Shore. We, two people here, like what we have at the moment. Broke my heart when KTV left. Absolutely, I'm still grieving over that. Love to have a local person that brings TV and radio and all of that in. Anyway, that's it. And, yeah, so I just hope there's lots of conversation going on, lots happening. Government, quite a while ago, 18 months ago maybe, even put out a statement saying, please, we want to hear from everybody, be it TV and radio too, was put in that telecommunications. So I'm hoping people are doing that and something can come together as a cooperative or whatever.
Yep. Sounds like a brilliant idea.
That's where I'm thinking of, as a little person who has a little phone bill, hardly ever uses dial-up anymore, any of that stuff down there. I don't even know what fixed voice means on your other slide. But, yeah, and you're right. I hardly ever use my mobile anymore. I don't even, you know, but it's just, anyway.
Thank
I'm
you.
Not totally disappointed, but I'm really looking forward to the future. And you do have to do number one. Your biggest job there is number one.
Thank you. Agreed. Understood. And
I personally think that a local terrestrial network is absolutely essential, whether it's only just for phone network or mobile. It's absolutely essential. And I think going forward, transparency is an absolute key, regardless whether it's Shaw or a new operator or who it is. Absolute transparency with what's happening, because possibly, maybe, Shaw wasn't transparent enough with what you were thinking with the ideas. Maybe this could have all came forward earlier and things would have been a bit different. But local network is an absolute essential for the islands for redundancy, if nothing else. What does Shaw have as a road plan going forward? Like, is there an immediate road plan for upgrades?
Because
there was a letter went around for all these mobile complaints, and it was the very same letter sent to everyone. It was a rather, we're not going to do it, almost reads.
No, sorry, I think that's, let me explain that a bit. So I think there was five specific instances when you're talking about letters. So there's five of them, just to put it into context. We are now fixing those issues with a reasonable investment that we're making in trying to evolve again some of the mobile problems and coverage issues that we've got. So, I mean, Roman, maybe you can just talk a little bit about that. But basically, that's coming in later this year.
Yes, so we've already started to order equipment to come in. So what that letter was about, we were waiting for approval for the CapEx funding, which is why we couldn't address it right then. Now we've had that approval. The equipment actually the order has already been placed. We'd hope to start. So there's areas where we're looking at. So Goose Green is one of those as well. Stanley, Port Howard. It will start. Goose Green should start around June of this year, and Stanley within September, October time, by the time the equipment gets here and we start to install. But we will send out some comms. So we're doing some comms as well that will go out and just explain what we're doing, which areas as well.
Does that include
Saunders? Not at this point. Definitely includes Saunders, no. So we're addressing the other areas, but not at this point for Saunders.
Thank you, Dougie.
Is an isolated location not more sort of vulnerable with no communications over, or rather than Stanley? Well, Saunders is quite isolated, but it's a long way out. You know, if they can't get coverage out there, why is that not given a priority over Stanley, where you can get help quickly if you need it?
The number of customers that are affected in Stanley compared to the number of customers affected in Saunders. But also, that's not saying we aren't doing a plan for Saunders, but at this point in time, for this year, that's what we've already started. There are recommendations for Saunders.
We'll pick that up as a. I'll pick that up with Raymond.
I think you should bear that in mind. And the vulnerability for the camp community.
Yeah, but I don't think we don't have any service today. I don't think that's the problem, is it?
It's a service indoors. It's a service that comes site. That is
true. Okay. A lot of the problems getting the approval for the spend, which I think you've had on a generator as well.
Roger, let me just quickly. Because you are giving me quite a grilling today. This is the third grilling today, which I appreciate that you're representing your constituents. But I've been thinking about what you said on the time it takes for us to approve things back in Guernsey for the local team's requests. So one of the things that I asked the team was, to do was A, to understand what difference is it going to make to do this, and the second thing was, once I'd understood it was going to make a difference, could we do it more quickly? So the team was saying that it would take till probably the end of the year to make these improvements, and I was saying, this is crazy. We need to do it more quickly than that. So the first part of the work, I think, has been done in June, and the rest of the work will be done in September. So there is, to give us some credit, we took the time to push back on how could we do it in the end more quickly. It wasn't wasted time. So hopefully that reassures you somewhat that we're not sat in our ivory towers in Guernsey just trying to work out how to make more money, but we're actually trying to work out how to improve things and do it more quickly as well. One of the frustrations I've always had with the Falklands is how long things take to get done here. It takes ages to get stuff here, and then it seems because of the challenging weather, we lose days and days and days of working time to be able to put upgrades into the network. So the team are amazing, they do an amazing job, but it's not easy to make improvements to camp in particular and the west and that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, not much fun doing it.
It's dangerous. It's dangerous, and that's why we can't climb poles when it's blowing a gale, and we can't climb poles when it's icy, you know. So there's a limit to what we can do as well, which is why we want to try and get this stuff in as quickly as possible. Hi.
Due to sure exclusiveness of license, and we have been having such accountability, can sure provide a transparent breakdown of the milestone achieved with the £8 million in the government subsidies compared to the original performance target? That's my number one question. Most of the questions people have asked, for which I had written down. So my other one, which they have not covered, is the business growth. So with Bundy's cited as a major barrier to local innovation, what business first strategies are being implemented for high capacity sectors like tourism and fisheries? And I think I don't know, mean that restrictiveness, I don't know how it's going to be improved. But I think it's everyone complaining, especially like us. When we come here, I've tried to make my subscriber in Tanzania to find out if they have any agreement with Sure. This day they don't have any subscriber in agreement with the roaming with Sure. So that is one also of our barriers. Because like for me in Tanzania, if I'm out of country for 6 months, my line will be bad until when I'm coming back home and then think up and take it and do the thing. But if I'm in the roaming, then shows that I'm out. So I'll pause all the questions and then I can leave you in the pool. So does Sure have a roadmap to reduce roaming costs for those who can purposely be having a roaming cost here, or implement eSIM technology to better support international travel and connectivity? And it's a bit basing on my professionalism, I just want to...
Sorry, just on the eSIM one, you know we do have in eSIMs here.
Yeah, I've heard about.
Yeah.
So I was wanting to pose questions and then can leave you guys in the pool and then you can just dive in.
Yeah.
If I can remember all the questions.
I think you need to set the questions.
I had to do a homework when I saw the thing and then so that I say I should not be getting out of the scope. I should be leading so that I don't talk on the hair. This is what I wanted to explain about or to give it off, okay? So, how much of the public subsidies went toward tangible speed increase versus internal operational costs?
Okay.
And I'll finish. Just give me that. And so you've been talking about the broadband statements and whatever, and so what is the uptime percentage of speed guarantees Sure is willing to include in the future services agreement? And last but not the least, we have been having economic development strategy which has been held. How does Sure being aligned into it to make sure that the economic development strategy which has been taken into place will be effective be implementable, right? And it will be sustainable. While you'll be taking either now, I don't know, if there will be a diving for competitiveness in the organization, or we'll still be doing exclusiveness, of which I can even find it's very hard, because sometimes you can see, when I'm talking with my people, I feel different in Tanzania, right? Then overnight you find it's cracking up. We are in fact, man, we are in the 21st century, but the way the things are run, especially when it comes to telecommunication, which is a vital in the world, when it comes to communication, everything is vital. So let me just put a full stop there and not get excited, and then you can dive in.
Thank you. Well, you're going to have to correct me on some of my, whether I've remembered all of your questions. So I'll do my best. So we basically did two agreements plus the agreement that we came to. There was two prior agreements with the government on subsidy. They were in 2019 and 2022. Thank you. as part of those agreements, Shaw had to deliver increases in speeds, had to deliver increases in particularly the quotas of the broadband packages. And we obviously did that. And we delivered that, and they were, at the time, very well received. Now, I know in hindsight, everyone says, well, you know, but Starlink, you could get this and Starlink could get that. Yes, but at the time, we said, particularly both were both very, very well received. We increased by, doubled, tripled, in some cases, increased the speed by 200-300%, that kind of stuff. So there was a big uplift, albeit from a very, you know, as people felt at the time, quite a low base. But things progressed markedly, and that money was all reinvested into the capacity and into the network to be able to do that. We didn't employ more people as a result of it. We didn't do other things as a result of it. We did, and we sat down with the government and said, this is what we'll do. Even the government worked with us or observed the tender process that we ran to select the geostationary providers for capacity. So we did it in partnership, and it honestly felt like a really strong partnership that ran through from 2019 to when we did that agreement in 2023 as well. Things started to go wrong a little bit when Starlink came along, you know, sort of people started to use Starlink. But the agreement that we have now that kind of sits on top of that, that allows for the unlimited plans, allows for Starlink to be licensed. All of that money, again, is just going into continuing to maintain the operation that we maintain. We have committed more resources, more money, more people to improving the broadband network. We've also committed it to buying extra capacity as well. So, yeah, hopefully that answers that question.
But what I'm just saying is that if, for example, and I don't know if there's any report which has been submitted to the government showing on how you have been spending the subsidies which have been given by the government, so is there that accountability of transparency on how do you spend those money? Are they really into improving the things, or they are all into your operational costs?
Well, they are into operational costs. The operational cost is into buying the capacity.
Yeah.
The transparency, I think, is a key issue. And I think going forward, the new things have to change. Yeah? And that's one of the things that has to change.
Yeah.
And I think particularly my sense is that when I talked about all of the investment that's required for the local networks, my sense is that will probably require some combination of a local operator investing alongside the government. So, but doing that in a strategic way, not in spending £1 million a year or £2 million a year or something like that, more in a strategic manner. And I think if that happens, then transparency on the investment, how that money is spent, where it goes, the return on investment that Roger's been talking about as well, all of that needs to be very much out in the open and discussed.
Thank you very much. Can you move on into the business growth now? Because expectations, like, we need to encourage the local business to grow, and they cannot grow if they are limited to all these brand growth and you understand what I mean?
I think I do. I think what you're saying is, and hopefully that picture I painted about what is possible would mean that businesses would flourish in terms of they would have access to any and all of the type of capacity that they would like, you know. And when that happens, that means you can get hold of all the cloud services that you want to get hold of, or you can launch more, you know, potentially digital nomads can come and live in the Falklands and run businesses like that from here. If that's what you want as a community, those are the sorts of things that you could set up. So yes, and right here and right now, if you have a business or you know someone who wants extra capacity, who wants to get a faster broadband connection or faster mobile connection, please speak to the team, and because it's there, we have capacity, we can pass it on. We have been offering fibre direct to business customers a lot more over the last 18 months because we've had the ability to do that. And then things can keep moving forward. On the roaming side of things, roaming's pretty tricky for such a small island to go and negotiate and build that. I think one of the things maybe we should consider in our proposal is how we could make that a bit easier, though. So maybe it is an eSIM. You know, a special travel eSIM that you could get from shore. It just wouldn't be with a Falkland Islands number, and that's something then that you could use when you're going aboard. I don't know if that would be.
Yes, but thank back to my country, it's more a little bit developed, because now what they have done for people us, which they're calling us diasporas. So if you can always have mobile banking money and you just transfer some money over your mobile phone, they'll keep your SIM card alive. They will not buy it off. So they find a way on how to keep all their.
So what I'm thinking of is you could use an eSIM from shore, say that has roaming on it, and that you could keep that number alive for as long as you use it, and as long as you're a shore Falklands Islands customer, something else, maybe something that sits alongside. Anyway, let's.
Well, I can just say I appreciate for you answering my questions. Can I use the floor now, and the robot again take
the floor back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
You've done very well.
Yeah. Anything else anyone would like to ask?
Are you holding other qualifications?
No, I'm as enjoyable as this has been. This is we had the session this morning with as you know, with the business, sort of with the chamber. There's this session today, and then that's it from my visit in terms of public meetings. I do wonder whether we could do a bit more research to get from the community what are the things that you're looking for, to add to some of those early questions that we've had answered, because I think the problem could be that I haven't seen it, but what the government did last year in terms of starting to ask that in through that consultation on the future of services was potentially, and I'm not saying it is, but it's potentially a little bit marred by what was happening at the time, you know. And I think it might be worth everyone thinking about what are the requirements now that situation has really changed. Now let's pick people's brains on what they want given that Starlink is here, given that we've launched Unlimited. Let's now look forward without that kind of situation.
I think, to be fair, just as an islander and living out in camp, whatever, I think you've got quite a lot of work to do to get people's trust back if you want to continue operating here. I know that when people start getting Starlink, I was one of them, illegal, bringing Starlink in, and it was a game changer for us. And at the time, I think you commented that, you know, the more people that use Starlink, the worse it would get, which wasn't the case. You've changed your mind on that?
Yes, somewhat, because, you know, it's an excellent service. I still kind of stick with the general concept. It is congested in some places and some parts of the world, and they stop selling it in some parts of the world and that kind of stuff. I think things have probably moved on as well, a degree, you know, with the investments that they've been making themselves. And as I say, that's going to carry on improving. So I think it's important to think of it as, at least, at the very least, as complementary to what a local operator like us could do. But I completely understand the point that you're making about trust and needing to repair that. Yep. And hopefully, and I know that's not going to happen overnight, but, you know, hopefully you can see this, the hard work that we've putting in over the last 18 months, the improvements in customer satisfaction demonstrates that we are trying to do the right thing, and we stay committed to that as well. And we'll stay committed to that at least until the end of the licence.
Yeah. There is a comment on social media about this meeting tonight, and it is the fact that it's very disappointing to see that it hasn't been streamed. And why wasn't it? And hope MLAs take note of that. Well, this one is taking note of that, and it's actually saying that, you know, the camp constituents, you know, couldn't get involved in this. And I think this could have been set up in a much better way so that more public could be involved. Between 5 and 6 is not a good time anyway for people to come. I think, you know, it could have been done maybe later in the evening, or I don't know what would have been a better time. I'm not sure how long you're here for, or whether it could have been done on Saturday or something like that, so that more people could attend. But I do take the point that there are ways to have streamed this, and if that meant a Starlink outside this building, then that could have been done so that people could actually participate.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did it over OneWeb last year. Yeah, forget the technology for the moment. The point's well made. Yeah,
it's disappointing, and you know, I've just seen the one comment so far with a few responses to it, and I'm sure there'll be many more, because you look around here, there's hardly any members of the public, you know, picking a percentage of our community. This is a pretty poor show.
And the perception of closed doors, and this is a public meeting, and there's not many people here, so. I don't know what that says.
But the media are here, so TV.
But the public, the people aren't here.
Ask the questions.
Very few of us here.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
I'm just passing on what somebody has said.
Yeah, no, but I'm apologising. I'm apologising to that person and acknowledge that.
There should have been more thought put into it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk to Roma and the team about maybe how we address that as well. I do think there's a point about, as I say, us trying to engage more and understand what are the things that need to be addressed as part of the process to win back trust. And also to make sure that we have the best information to be able to convince you, the community, that we can play a role in the future as well. So I take your point seriously in terms of we could have done better, and see how we address that.
I don't always think the Chamber of Commerce is the best venue for a public meeting. I think there are probably members of the public who think Chamber of Commerce automatically business community,
right,
which you know, I mean, okay, there was...
So the optics...
Yeah, the optics of it, there was a business meeting here this morning, which I attended as well, but I think if we're going to have a public meeting, then perhaps it should have been in the courts, and then it could have been perhaps live streamed from there, I don't know, just a suggestion. The Chamber is not always the best venue. It's a great venue, but it is a business venue.
Okay, thank you. We'll take that and see how we address it, but we will.
Anyway, my brain hurts. So thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your time. Thank you.